Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to ESPN's The Far Post podcast. We are back after a simply enormous weekend of A-League women action. There were some very fun results, some controversy, some spicy moments. It was, you know, just your stock standard weekend of dub, and that's why we absolutely love it and we can't wait to get into all of the action. Before we do, though, we want to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands we're recording on today, the Wurundjeri people, and pay our respects to their elders past and present. For today, you've got me, Marissa Lordanik, Anna Harrington, and Angela Christian Wilkes. So, my friends, let us begin with some you love to see it. Angela, what did you love to see from this weekend?
This might be a little bit repetitive, but we're coming to near the end of the season and I'm like, why not celebrate another Michelle Heyman goal while I still have the chance to? Because as many will know by now, Canberra are well out of the finals race, but very positive. They got a win against Wellington. It was Heyman's goal in the 78th minute. Flannery cross. Classic Canberra. Yeah, you love to see it. And I will say what I did not love to hear pre-pod, Marissa confirmed to me that the last time Canberra had kept a clean sheet was in March 2023. So they nearly made it a year, but they didn't, which I think is also nice to note. Clean sheet for Canberra, you love to see it. I think Chloe Lincoln had quite a good game. They had their young Tillies back. So overall, pretty positive things for a Canberra fan. And yeah, Heyman, you know, heading in the ball with their bunts and getting a goal. You love to see it.
As she does. We always love to see it. And the clean sheet is very good and very important for Canberra. But we move on. Marissa, what did you love to see? Well, Marissa, thank you so much for asking me. I love to see, can you imagine? I would go to town with just like a little puppet of myself asking me questions. Anywho, not the point. I love to see Kaya Stevenson's chip for Brisbane Roar in their 2-0 win over Perth Glory. It was very audacious, as chips are. Like, have you ever seen a non-audacious chipped goal? I don't think so. I felt particularly bad for Sarah Kane, who's the Perth player who attempts the back pass and Kaya Stevenson just pounces onto it. And you can see the like immediate slumped shoulders of Sarah Kane. Like, you can't see her face, but you just know that she's looked at this ball and gone, oh no, no. But full credit to Kaya Stevenson and the finish. It was absolutely stunning. Huge win for Brisbane Roar, the 2-0 victory over Perth. So absolutely love to see it. Harrow, what did you love to see this weekend?
I was getting ready to introduce myself. Well, just imagine what a crazy pod that would be. I love to see it. Well, probably Melbourne Victory didn't love to see it, but I love when a player comes back to haunt their former club, you know, that you didn't want them, that sort of stuff. I'm sure Melbourne Victory very much wanted Melina Reyes, but she moved on to greener pastures in Newcastle. It's not been a great run for her. She's had injuries. She's barely played. Serena Bolden's ended up being the star striker there. But she replaced Bolden, with Newcastle trailing Victory 2-1 on the weekend. And cometh Melina Reyes. Equalised with a, took a throw, received a throw in, let the ball roll across her and just powered that one into the bottom corner. But then in the 80th minute, I don't think Emma Checker will look back on this too happily, lets the ball go. It's worked back to Melina Reyes and from really the top of the box. She absolutely lets rip, scores the winner. There's none of this, no celebrating against my former team. Everyone's jumping on her. It's fantastic. And most importantly for Melina Reyes, it's and for the Jets, it's kept Newcastle's season alive heading into the final round. And at the same time, it's put Victory in a very, very precarious situation. So Melina Reyes won plenty of silverware at Melbourne Victory and comes back to haunt her and reminds everyone of her quality. I think this is a player that should be, if she can get herself fit and firing again for a consistent amount of time, should be knocking on the door, Matildas wise, because she's such a smart striker, really nice age bracket, about to turn 25. You'd love to see that. So Melina Reyes, reminding everyone just what she can do and making this chaos league get even more chaotic. You'll love to see it.
Oh, man, it was so good. A Melina Ayres banger. Like, that's just vintage dub. That's what the people want to see. It was so good. And I'm glad you kept saying the word, like, remind, because, like, if we're going to do sliding doors, can you imagine how Newcastle season could have gone if they actually had a fully fit Melina Ayres for the entire campaign? Like, would the conversation we're about to have actually be happening? We'll never know. But, yeah.
And just so many other conversations. What could it have meant for Melina Ayres? Had she played like, been fit, firing, played like this, she could have been the one putting her name into the Matilda selection spotlight instead of, or maybe alongside Michelle Haim and Sophie Harding. And she's clearly got the ability of former young Matilda. It's always been about like getting it to click and being fit and firing and being looked at, really. There's so many what ifs, but she is a real final specialist. Melina Ayres. So if the Jets get there, you'd have a fair bit of faith in her to pull something special out of the hat.
100%. But let's talk about that game because it was really one of the ones that was earmarked as having finals ramifications. It was, highlighted with the permutations tab. Everyone was like, we need to see what's going to happen here. And in the end, it was the Jets winning 3-2 over Melbourne Victory. So first off, just how massive is this, obviously, for Newcastle season? As you said, it keeps their finals hopes alive. Can they take the momentum from this win and actually go on and finish the job and make it into finals?
They should do. They're playing Adelaide, who have nothing to play for but pride, let's be honest. Like, they should be able to do everything in their power to make it come down to the Victory game, right? Because Victory play afterwards and they only need a draw against Sydney FC, albeit it's a rampant Sydney FC, like they're in a really difficult position. But Newcastle should do absolutely everything to make sure that Victory have to get a result. And they're in a great position to do it. I know they've been inconsistent, but they've given themselves a sniff. I thought actually from the opening whistle, they looked the more dangerous of the two teams at the good old number two sports ground. They hit the bar a couple of times before Victory snatched the lead. To be fair, after that, Victory should have put them away. I think it was Dapolonia had a fresh airy at 2-1 up, could have made it 3-1. I still don't know how they didn't bury that, but the Jets deserve so much credit for the way they fought back in. Lauren Allen was great. I liked that they made the bowl call. Like Serena Bolden, it just wasn't her day in front of goal. That happens to the best players, right? And bringing on Melina Ayres as that impact sub just worked beautifully. They put themselves in that position. The question is, can they back it up? That'd be a huge emotional toll coming out of that game for both teams. Like, it's a huge emotional high. It's just remembering that isn't the final, right? That wasn't the game that got them into finals. That's the game that's kept their season alive. They still have to do the job, do the business one more time when they can't lean on the underdog tag. You can't. If you're playing an opponent that's already out of finals, you are the favourites. Newcastle have to professionally get the job done. It's really exciting. I think it would have given locals a real lift, especially with so much talk about the future of the club. They're of course 3 points behind Melbourne Victory, as I said, so Victory do only need to get a point. But for those playing at home, permutations wise, this year there was that bizarre change that I don't think anyone understands why it happens, where in a terms of a tiebreaker, if teams are level on points, no longer comes down to goal difference, which would have Melbourne Victory currently above Western Sydney and, sort of in pole position to make it because their goal difference is so much better than both the Wanderers and Newcastle. But wins that are valued as more important. Western Sydney now have 10, Victory have 9, Newcastle have 9. So Western Sydney are 5th, Victory is 6th. And if the Jets win and Victory lose, it will be Victory missing out. So yeah, it's huge. It was a huge result for Newcastle, and it's just whether they can go on and do the business. But for me, I'm more intrigued by, like, if Newcastle make it, it'll be a fantastic story. But geez, the other side of the coin, the victory potential boil over is huge. This is one of the most stacked squads in the league, one of the most decorated coaches. They've got quality upon quality upon quality. And their failure to put this game away, they've had a couple of weeks in a row where they had a chance to steal their final spot on the live table. And you shouldn't read too much into it because there's all sorts of games in hand and all that. At one point, Victor were actually top. And then by the end of this game, they were sixth. And they could easily slip to seventh next week. It just shows how tight this league is. But emphasizes the importance of converting when you're in winning positions, especially with, as I said, this new system that rewards wins over straight points, right? So, yeah, it's pretty extraordinary the position they found themselves in, considering I think when you look at that squad and then you look at the mid-season bolstering of an Alex Chidiak and the fact that you can have players like a Jess Nasher and Alana Murphy in particular coming off the bench. Yeah, it's a huge the way they failed to close that game out, I think Victory would be filthy with. I'm sure Jeff Hopkins would be because they've obviously prided themselves on defence and, let themselves down. So, and it could well cost them a spot in the finals.
I think everyone's probably waiting for us to talk about some of the shenanigans that went down. But I think Newcastle, like, I believe that they can win over Adelaide, but the question mark for me, I suppose, is over who will be in goals, because to the best of, like, just from memory, Nino has, for those who weren't following along at home, she got a red card in this game, their goalkeeper. And off the top of my head, she's been in goals for all of their season and has been really consistent there. Harrow, do you have the stats?
Not even the stats, just that the FA match review panel outcome has just come out as we're recording.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Breaking news.
Yeah. Izzy Nino. Offensive assault on a player. We'll get into the biff in just a moment because it's very relevant. And she had the minimum sanction for that is actually two matches, because one match is a mandatory match suspension for getting a red card. And for, assault on a player, it's an additional one. So that would mean she'll either miss the Adelaide game plus the first final if Newcastle make it, or the Adelaide game plus, say, round one next year if she's still playing at the Jets. So I guess no better opportunity than now to get into the biff.
Oh, that is stressful for her. And I think that's just kind of like she's played, what, every single minute she possibly could have for the Jets this season. So, obviously that will be on everyone's mind in the Jets camp, but I guess maybe that's also like a point to prove that they can do it without her as well. I'm not too sure, but yeah, in terms of and like you touched on, Harrow, the Victory side of it is pretty daunting for them as well, and I guess that could make for the Sydney Victory game to be really quite exciting, I suppose, as well, because they'll probably be smarting after this loss to the Jets and be wanting to round out the season. And the additional pressure, I think, Jeff Hopkins would be fuming that they're going into this with this game as a must win as well. But, you know, good football, good entertainment for us. Marissa, did you want to lead with the biff, or
the blow of the biff?
Set up the biff. Well, we did have a question. Are we bringing back the biff? It would appear the biff has been brought back. And it was interesting to watch. So Mindy Barbieri is crouched down, tying up her shoelace.
I think the context here is her number had just come up for a substitution as well.
So she's term wasting. She's been a little bit mischievous. And you know what? It is what it is. You do what
we
you
like
do.
It.
M. Gilnick is like,
not having this.
I don't like it.
And because M. Gilnick is a very tall woman, she's like, I'm just going to simply yoink and pick up Mindy Barbieri and move you, get you on your feet, move you on your way. Unsurprisingly, Mindy Barbieri was not having that. So they're, you know, engaging in some, it's not fisticuffs, that's definitely not the right word. There's some grabbing of shirts and some pushing and some pulling. Argy-bargy. And then all of a sudden, like a black shadow, Izzy Nino just runs in to defend Mindy Barbieri's honour, as you kind of want from your teammate, but takes it, I would argue, a little bit too far. There's hands around necks, and that's when things get a little bit, how you going? So we did have a question basically asking, we've got the red for Nino, which we've just had confirmed with the match review panel, Barbieri and Gilnick getting yellows. Did everyone get the right colour card in your opinions?
I think the first thing that people should note with this compared to an A-League men's game is there's no VAR. So neither the ref nor the assistant referee had the opportunity to lean on hindsight. So I think everyone should take that into consideration when look at this. They couldn't go and be like, oh, let's have a look. Da, da, da. So it's quite a long discussion for, and there was also, you know, the referees obviously didn't want to get involved in the biff. There's quite a long discussion between the two as to, you know, how they were going to approach it. And I think, first of all, right decision with Izzy Nino. She came in, it was like third player in. There was no need. And when you go for the neck, even if it's unintentional, all that sort of thing, it doesn't matter. It's just a straight red, right? Like, it's, she sort of gave the referee no choice. And you can sort of see it coming because the ref had taken the book of cards out of the pocket, and you like could just see she's going, and this one, and this one, and this one. Mindy Barbieri, I thought a yellow was fair, time-wasting, involved in a scuffle, straight up. I think the most contentious one was, should Emily Gilnick have just got a yellow or should she have got a red? And I can understand both points of view there. Like, for one thing, I think it's a pretty standard thing. If someone's time-wasting and you yoink him up, she wasn't injured, Barbieri. If it's messing with an injured player, I think people, you know, more likely to say, well, that red. But she's yoinking her up because of time-wasting. You know, I think that's usually, you know, when you see players pulled over to the sideline and stuff like that, that's usually a yellow. I think the query is whether, because the pushing and shoving continued, should it have been a red? I can see both sides. But I thought the referees handled it pretty well in that sense. I thought pretty fair, yellow, yellow, red. And, yeah, I thought that was pretty fair enough, to be honest. Angela?
Yeah, I have questions about, because Melinda Barbieri also played for this victory, like for victory for quite a few years as well. So like a question I'll never have answered is if there were kind of tensions throughout the game that maybe led into that moment. And obviously emotions were running high by the time Emily Gilnick tried to yoink Barbieri off the field. I think that context was important as well, because a few of the clips have been cut where it just kind of shows the shoving starting. But that kind of added to the context of what was going on. The ref was quite close to what was happening. And again, I'm wondering if there's some stuff like, if Gilnick like pointed it out and then nothing happened and then she was like, fine, I'll take it into my own hands, quite literally, and remove this player from the field of play. If I was MJ Barbieri, I would have been shooken to be lifted up that way. But I don't think it counts as violent conduct, which is what kind of the straight red would be. And again, the tussle afterwards, if that had happened and then like Nino hadn't come in and gotten involved, would it have been a red for Gilnick for me? Probably not. Yeah. So I think they did get it right. But like you say, Harry, like, the refs have to make these decisions pretty quickly. It made me laugh when you said, you're like, the refs don't want to get involved in the biff. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's like, they definitely would not. But it was just a comical image in my mind. So yeah, I think, yeah, the right colours. If this was men's intercollegiate college soccer, which is like my main reference point for disciplinary issues, everyone would have gotten a red card. But, you know, very different context. Very different context. I think the refs made the right decision for this one. Yeah, that was a really long way of saying, yes, correct decisions were made.
Nah, I agree as well. Very well handled by the referees there. We've spoken a lot, obviously, about the ladder and the permutations heading into this final week of Dobbs, so it would be remiss of us not to mention the last team in these calculations for the final spot in the top six, and it's Western Sydney, and they did their finals chances a world of good as well with a 3-1 win over Western United in the Western Girly Derby. We've been calling it that for like a year now. I just keep saying derby like I'm from Western Australia, which is not.
Actually, on brand, though.
Yeah.
Like, if yeah. Perth Glory were involved. Is it the distance a distance derby or a distance derby? Or does it depend which side of the ditch you're on?
Yeah, because I was about to do a Kiwi accent, but I'm going to stop myself and not do that. But anyway, this Battle of the Westerns. Which West is best? It was the Wanderers getting up 3-1, as I said. Sophie Harding double, Ella Buchanan goal, which there was some question marks over its validity, but there was a seeming consensus that Alana Cern kept her onside. So
yeah,
everything
I think so.
In the end.
Huge win for the Wanderers, right?
Massive.
Like, they were down a goal as well. Hannah Keane toe-poked Western United in front early on, and yeah, with your season on the line, things sort of fading away, well, not fading away, but you know, in scruff, they've really like come from the clouds the past couple of weeks to step it up. Credit to Buchanan, credit to Sophie Harding. Buchanan goal's pretty funny because it's come about, it's not like, I think Harding will probably get credited with an assist, but it's totally just like a miscued shot that's like, you know, gone to Ella Buchanan, who had the poise to finish it. I agree, live it looked offside, but then you see the replays and it looked like Alana Cern was keeping her on. Two really nice finishes from Harding to wrap it up. But yeah, permutations wise, another huge game. Effectively, it scuppered Western United's title hopes. It really, it put the Wanderers in pole position now to make finals, because as I mentioned, they've got one more win than Victory and the Jets. And they play Wellington now, who went and just stuffed up their own finals chances by losing to Canberra. So they're out. Sorry, Wellington. You leave it too late. These things happen. We can't all have potential fairy tales. Sorry, Knicks fans. But, yeah, it's huge. But let's be honest. Like, the whole thing just got completely overshadowed, right? Like, Hannah Keane's injury in about the 70th minute just ruined the game. And you know an injury's bad when you see an opposition player, you can hear opposition players yelling at the ref to stop play, yelling at their teammates to stop play. Amy Harrison was I think the one that was contesting for the ball with Hannah Keane when she was running. She sort of seemed to get her foot stuck in the turf and then it caught under her. I think we haven't had confirmation, potential leg break, potential, just the way her leg went. We don't go look at it, especially just one of those awful injuries. And Amy Harrison, who has had her fair share of horror injuries in her own right, the Wanderers captain, was right there on the scene, comforting Hannah Keane, and play obviously stopped. Credit to players from both teams who sort of shielded the cameras away and, you know, got in the way and made sure play stopped and were there. And, yeah, the green whistle came out pretty quickly. And Hannah Keane is now in hospital and stable and, you know, being looked after. Western provided that update after the game. But, you know, that's pretty clearly going to be a season-ending injury for her. Devastating, you know, these bad injuries. She's got a lot, probably going to have a long recovery road ahead, you'd think. And for Western as well, that's their two main goal scorers, or three, I think, of their main goal scorers are now out for the season. You obviously have Chloe Legazzo, well, not confirmed out for the season, but looks very unlikely to make a run at finals with that hip injury. Adriana Taranto did her knee, and now Hannah Keane, so yeah, everything just, going about as badly as it could for poor old Western United at the moment. Just pretty devastating because they'd been playing some really fun, aggressive, scintillating football in the past couple of months especially. It's a bit of a mid-episode boot for mine, but, yeah, to Hannah Keane's injury. But, yeah, it just totally overshadowed things, right? And it is for me, it would take one of the gutsiest efforts of all time for Western to somehow pull silverware out of this finals campaign or to go very far at all, because it's just it's just going so wrong and in such a way that they probably couldn't control at all when it's injury related. So yeah, you really feel for Cat Smith's team. And obviously the impact that sort of injury can have. I think the Wanderers scored their third goal afterwards, and you know, you can't blame Western for shipping another one after that. Yeah. But kind of just devastating, right? For friend of the pod, Hannah Keane, who we send our best wishes to. I guess, Angela, Wanderers. They are, like, did you see them making this sort of resurgence? Like, I thought maybe even a month ago they might have stuffed it up.
I don't know. As soon as, like, they kind of came good makes it sound like it's definitive and, you know, they stayed good. But they had some really positive early show-ins, and I think they've kind of never been out of the conversation for mine since they kind of those early show-ins of, yeah, pretty exciting football. And once it became pretty obvious as well, like, the kind of chemistry between the group and like Robbie Hooker as well, and how much he's kind of bolstered the side. I think that says a lot, and I think that's carried them this far. So it makes sense. It's like, it's surprising if you were telling me a year ago that this was going to be like the finals contention race, but since, like, with the context of the season, it kind of makes sense. But I think it's really interesting also that Brisbane are out of finals discussion now, if I'm doing my maths correctly, which, you know, there's always a possibility I'm not. But like, there's been quite a few teams this season that have had coaching changes quite abruptly, like very close to the season or in the season, and Brisbane were included in that. They've all kind of gotten second wins or kind of proved themselves in a way and come back from that, which I think is pretty exciting. But Western Sydney are in that group. Newcastle Jets as well, Ben Egmond left. I can't remember, was that just after Christmas? I don't know. It was a while ago now, but the fact that they're still contending in these circumstances is like really exciting as well. And I think also a testament to the longer season and the capacity to kind of, you know, have, you know, bad patches, good patches, and still be able to put that all together and contend for finals towards the end. So yeah, Western, and yeah, I've been pretty positive about Western Sydney, or been feeling pretty positive about Western Sydney since Unite round, I think, and that win over City, that kind of made it all click in my mind as to what they were kind of doing there. But yeah, good for them, good for Jets, maybe not good for Victory, but maybe we can talk about that, I don't know.
We will have to talk about that eventually, depending on next week's results. So very quickly, the three teams that are fighting for those last final spots, as we've said repeatedly now, Newcastle, Victory, Western Sydney Wanderers. The Wanderers have Wellington in Wellington, Newcastle have Adelaide in Adelaide, and Victory, as we know, have Sydney FC in Sydney. Who's making the six?
Wanderers. Wait, I need my diagram that isn't a diagram. It's just scribbles. Okay. Hang on. Well, Ari, you go first.
I'm just going to go with vibes. Wanderers. Mm-hmm. I think Wanderers. It should be the Wanderers and the Jets. But I just have this feeling that someone's going to let slip and Victory will sneak in. I've got this bad feeling that the chaotic dub will do something silly like Jets don't win against Adelaide and Victory get in without having to actually do anything.
The safest bet is always chaos. Yeah, you're correct. I do think, just if we're going very, if we're taking away the vibes and looking at like standings and results, I guess it makes the most sense for Jets and Wanderers to go through. But then again, like, if you bring vibes into it, Sydney Victory, they have a long history in the finals as well. The kind of pride aspect will be leading going into that game for Victory and you know, showing up after the loss to Newcastle. So they're not out of the question for me. I think that they could do something against Sydney. I do agree with Harrowin that that something stupid could still happen. So, but yeah, I think my final answer is unfortunately Western Sydney and Jets getting through into the final six. Maybe I just have trust issues with Victory, but anyway.
I think it will be the Wanderers and Victory. Not confidently. I do think a lot of it comes down to Sydney FC. Because there's so many factors here, right? One thing, Sydney can wrap up the Premier's plate. They beat Canberra midweek, and you would expect them to do that. But if they stuff it up, they'll need to go all out. Well, not necessarily go all out, but they'll need a result against Victory, right? Quick maths. For mine, if you wrap up the Premier's plate midweek, you don't go full rest everyone mode, but you go a little bit of management mode because there's something bigger at stake, right? But at the same time, having been knocked out by Victory or lost to Victory a couple of times, I imagine those girls at Sydney would take a lot of satisfaction out of being the team that makes sure Victory don't play finals. Because they are they're also such a danger team. If they can get on a roll in finals, as inconsistent as they've been, right? They've got that goal scoring power. I think a bit does depend on that. I think the most likely outcome is Sydney FC get the job done midweek, and then don't go full rest mode, but are able to manage players a bit. It'll be a big opportunity for Victory, and they really just need a point out of it. You want to try and win, obviously, but they just need to get a result. I think the good thing for them is that they'll know exactly what they need to do, Victory, heading into that game. So, yeah, as I said, without much confidence, I'm saying Wanderers and Victory. But it's very unconvincing from Victory if they do.
I think the management piece just on Sydney FC is really interesting because assuming, like, I'm pretty sure they're not finishing below top two, which means they would have the first week of finals off. We are also heading into an international break, so there is a built-in rest period for majority of the dub squad and the dub players. So I wonder if maybe they're, like, resting doesn't come so much into their thought process because they'll have 2 weeks worth of rest before they actually play a semi-final. But it's all interesting. We will all see what happens. Just quickly, like, obviously whoever makes it through to finals will live to fight another week. It's going to be a huge moment, especially for the Jets and the Wanderers, who haven't played finals in yonks, which I think is the technical amount of time. But we did have a question on Twitter, and someone asked, is the season a failure, in quotation marks, for whichever of Western Sydney, Melbourne Victory and the Jets misses finals? So do we think it's a blanket failure, or is there nuance to it?
It's failure for Victory if they don't make finals. Harry, you spoke about it earlier on this pod. Like, they've got such a stacked squad. They've got so many A-League minutes and caps in that squad. They've got coverage all over the park. They've got good young players coming through as well. I think they also came out of the kind of, with young Tillies going overseas, they were relatively, like, they weren't impacted very much by that either, whereas some other clubs have that kind of, maybe, not as an excuse, but as a reason why things have been a little bit up and down in, you know, the last 3 weeks, month or so. For Victory, I think it would be a failure in the sense that it's far less than what we would have a lot of people would have expected from them, especially given their game record, especially given Hopkins' record. Like I said, the squad. In terms of, like, if it's, you know, panic stations, hitting the red button, you know, start over, and I definitely don't think that, but I do think there would be some pretty serious questions been asked as to why it happened as well. But it's a tricky one, though, because it's not like you can turn to the club and say that it's a lack of investment or they just haven't been given the tools to succeed because they have. So that's why it's probably a little bit puzzling. And it's stressful. I think they'll be asking those questions now that they even in this position where they're potentially not going to make finals as well. That could be like a subcategory of failure, maybe, you know, not going into final round, feeling confident and comfortable and having secured that final spot. For Jets and Wanderers, I don't think so. From the outside looking in, I think we've talked about this on the pod over the season as well. I think expectations have been quite low of both Jets and Wanderers. I don't think it's particularly controversial to say that for the past few seasons. So I think the fact that they're even in this position is, yeah, really exciting and good for them. And I think I hope it's indicative of like kind of a sustained presence in and around the final spot in seasons to come as well. Like I hope it, because Jets have made the finals once before and then they just kind of fell away again. Same with Wanderers. And I would really prefer not to see that regardless of how things pan out this season and who ends up in the finals and who doesn't. Harrow?
I think you've nailed it.
What do you reckon?
I think you're spot on. Clear failure for victory. And I think the fact that you've mentioned they've had the investment, they've got the coaching, they've got the players, Matildas. I wonder if they'll look at maybe how could they have gone about their international recruiting. I think Tori Hansen's been good, but they maybe don't have star power international. But, you know, Dapolini has been a workhorse, that sort of thing. Losing Lydia Williams to that ankle injury hasn't helped. But Courtney Newborn has been very, very good, considering what she's been asked to do. So, yeah, as I said, and as you said, clear failure. You're one of the most well-resourced, well-stocked teams in the league, arguably well-coached as well. Got the pedigree, got the players, got the resources. And, like, 3 weeks ago, they were the form team. They'd scored something like 13 goals in 3 games or something. And I think I said on the pod, like, showing that you're not flat-track bullying, right? That you're not a flat-track bully. And if they don't, if they don't make finals, then that's probably how you look back on those games, right? But, yeah, clearly a failure if they don't make finals. This is a team that should be contending for silverware. And if they make a first-round finals exit as well, it's still a failure for mine. They have to, I think, at least be making the final four, and realistically they should always be in the top 3 or 4 given what they have at their disposal. And I think every player and Jeff and his staff will probably say as much if they don't make finals too, right? And agree. I don't think if you looked on the balance of the season, it wouldn't be a failure for either Western Sydney or the Jets to miss finals given the work they've put in to reach this point. You'd more likely have that label on a Perth Glory, for example, that put themselves in real pole position and then fell away so dramatically. I think if Western Sydney miss out now, they've put themselves in pole position heading into a game where they really just need to do the bare minimum. I think a draw would get them through. And realistically, I think unless everything goes badly, Newcastle have a big win and they lose and Victory also win, they're pretty much there. So if they find a way to miss out by now, you'd probably go, this week is a failure. It wouldn't necessarily mean the whole season is, though. And the Jets, I mean, the lack of resourcing, the way they had to manoeuvre their way through the season, I don't think you could call it a failure if they missed by really the skin of their teeth. There's only one team that is really under a whole lot of pressure this week, and it's Melbourne Victory.
100%, absolutely agree with that. Let's quickly round up round 21. So we had Melbourne City defeating Central Coast Mariners 3-0 in a really emphatic, needed win for Melbourne City. We had Canberra getting a win over Wellington 1-0. Sydney just continue being Sydney with a 3-0 win over Adelaide, and Brisbane got that 2-0 victory over Perth Glory. We need to do a little bit of Tilly's chat. Since we last spoke, some things have happened, namely the announcement of the squad for the game against Mexico in a week and a bit's time,
And we had the Olympic draw, so we know our opponents for the Olympics. So any, like, headline takes out of either of those two things that you guys need to get off your chest and share with our listeners?
It was so long ago. How many days ago was it? I don't know.
Feels like 50, if we're being honest.
So squad and Olympics draw.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Can I just say, I tweeted something stupid with the intention of tweeting something stupid because everyone, so we've drawn, was it Germany, USA, and it's a toss-up between Zambia and Morocco, depending on how their playoffs go for the Olympic draw. Too long, didn't read. And I tweeted, I was like, why is everyone freaking out? Germany and the USA aren't even that good. And people took that seriously. And I'm like, oh, you must be new here. I'm not, I don't need you to explain to me why Germany are actually a good side. Like, I do know that. I know that I like to play the Joker, but I do not. But, you know, intended effect achieved. It did make me giggle. But, yeah, the Olympics draw, the other category of people stressing was the 3 a.m. starts, which Marissa is doing some research. She's putting together some resource packs for those who haven't done the 3 a.m. starts yet, watching the Tillys. But, it's so far into the future, I can't be bothered stressing about it right now, genuinely. But, we're fine. We've got this. We can do this. It's fine. Olympics. This is going to be easy. Piece of cake, whatever. So that is how I'm feeling at the moment. Check in like, 2 months? Might be feeling differently. Squad, maybe we circle back to that. Harriet, did you have any thoughts on the draw?
My big thought was it's a 12-team comp. You're always going to play someone hard. I thought it's a hard group. But the group of death and everything is hard chat. It's like, what did you expect? They were going to have to play someone good. It's a 12-team comp. There's, you know, the best countries in the world. Look at all the teams that didn't make it. Like England, for example. Oh, GB. Still very funny. It was always going to be difficult. For example, you know, they couldn't play Japan in the group stage because they're both in the AFC. So there's one team that gets ruled out. You're always going to have to play they're not having to play Spain in the group stage. The USA, yeah, they're due to come up against them and actually, you know, show that they can win this game. Germany, it's another top opponent, haven't played since those friendlies early in Tony's reign as coach, I guess, tenure as coach, and it's two very different teams now to then. And we'll wait and see on the third team. But you've got to play good teams. And I think the thing as well is, Matildas were World Cup semi-finalists. They finished fourth at the last Olympics, fourth at the last World Cup. And at what point are people going to stop thinking that it's an underdog team that, you know, just needs to have this attitude of, oh, it's so hard, we're in a group of death, oh, we're the underdogs. And, yeah, maybe compared to the US and Germany, at least on rankings-wise they are, but they've got to believe that they can match it with these teams, right? You're going to have to play good teams. It's just, yeah, it frustrates me a little bit. Like, it's not like maybe you've, a few years ago, or when the Socceroos go to the World Cup and there's like really, really big underdog, you know, efforts like the Socceroos playing eventual World Cup champions, Argentina and France in respective tournaments is real big underdog stuff. That at some point we've got to start thinking, yeah, you're in these difficult groups because one, you've qualified for the Olympics, really hard to do, and you're going to play teams that have also made it through that that arduous process. So, yeah, I think it was more that, yeah, narrative. It's going to be difficult, yes, but it's not like end of the world to have to play decent teams. I guess, yeah, you go, oh, could the draw have been a little bit easier? Yeah, obviously, you know, you probably like a New Zealand who seem to always rise to the occasion when they play Australia. Would you like some other changes? Yeah, France at home won't be easy either, and they're out for revenge. It was just interesting seeing the reaction. They'll be tough games, but they would have known this was going to be difficult. It was never going to be easy. The good thing in their favour is the bizarre third place, two best third place finishers go through is always a factor with this as well. So you aim to finish first or second, obviously, but there are, you know, quite a few routes to get through. Two-thirds of the teams get through to the next round. So, yeah, they've got to back themselves. They want to win a medal. If you want to win a medal, you've got to beat good teams. So, play on. Squad-wise, you know, not too many shocks in there. I think it was great to see Courtney Vine come straight back in. She obviously stepped away for personal reasons. Clearly feels that she can go back into that environment now. And the best bit is she's going to do so in red-hot form. I think before she got selected, she had, six goals in her past five games or something. Three braces. And then she scored again on the weekend to celebrate it. She's in awesome form. She's back to that dynamic Courtney Vine that we love, who's playing with freedom and without fear. And, you know, she's got over those injury concerns clearly. And a Courtney Vine who's high on confidence is the one you want to see. And maybe we haven't seen as much of that in more recent Matildas windows. So hopefully she gets in there and gets a good amount of game time. And that, you know, that blistering pace she's got is always going to be difficult to handle. And then I think Courtney Nevin was the only other inclusion, with obviously Legazzo dropping out through injury, and Sophie Harding was the 23rd player per se who hasn't been recalled. So, yeah, I don't know how much game time a Nevin will get, for example, or whether it will be an audition for her to play as a centre-back potentially. We'll see. But, yeah, not too many complaints about the squad. I was surprised that they didn't look to bring in an Emily Gilnick, just because she has been so red hot. I think they had to bring in Courtney Vine if she was right to go. But I would have liked to have seen a Gilnick thrown in there as well, just because she was sort of the form striker for a bit there. And just, you know, she's mature. She's got that aggression, that physicality, versatility. Just would have been worth looking at, especially in friendlies, right? So, yeah, not too many big and compelling thoughts on that. We know versatility is going to be good. I'm glad that Michelle Heyman stays in the squad. You couldn't not keep her in there. And Caitlin Tolpe as well, who's now playing in San Diego. I love that, and hopefully we see more of her. But not too many thoughts beyond that. An unsurprising squad, I think, is probably how I would put it.
I will say, just a very quick comment, I would, Tony, please, Claire Wheeler, minutes, when? Please. Like, she's unsurprising that she's in the squad. She's been in a lot of squads recently, but would like to see her played. And also, Marissa, I feel like you actually had a boot relating to venues that we might be going to.
You mean my undying hatred for the stud Denise?
Yeah.
I assume. Yes. Look. I had people message me like, Marseille. And I'm like, and Nice. And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, we're going back to Nice. New listeners, Nice was the scene of the crime that was the penalty shootout in the round of 16 of the 2019 World Cup, where Australia lost to Norway. Steph Catley was the only one to convert her penalty. I don't like Norway because of that. I'm really mean to Norway. I'm very mean to Nice and the stadium in Nice, but it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine, because that night in July is the night we're going to make it happen. We're going to exercise the demons and everything's going to be aces. So, yeah, I really thought that you were leading into a segue into the boots for this week, which was Claire Wheeler needs to get game time because Katrina Gorry was seen on crutches after this weekend's most recent WSL games, which is something we absolutely hate to see, and we hope that she is okay, obviously. But it kind of is just one of many little injury boots that we have from this week. So obviously Harrow did the mid-pod boot of Hannah Keane's injury, and we obviously hope that she is doing well and recovers speedily. We also had Kirsty Fenton confirmed as an ACL, the ninth one of this A-League women's season. So there's nothing much more we can say about the anterior cruciate ligament other than we hate it and we wish all of its victims smooth and speedy recoveries. There was another boot, if we would like to get into it.
Oh, is this the A-League All-Stars?
It is, indeed. Yeah.
Sorry, very quick boot. I don't pay attention to the fellas very much, but I do think that they've been hard done by. This is going to lead into a how good, or maybe I don't know how to do this. Anyway, A-League All-Stars, the A-League All-Stars men's game that has been announced to take place in May, is they're playing Newcastle United, the English Newcastle team, and it's like the day before the A-League men's grand final. And I'm like, how can it be All-Stars if a lot of, presumably the players that would, maybe I've misunderstood the All-Stars setup, but that just seems strange to me. So I'm like, that's I'm giving a confused boot to that, for feminism and equality, I guess, standing up for the dudes when they have weird fixturing things happen as well. That's it. That's all. I just don't really understand it. Harrow, you pay attention to the mob. Is there a reason why? Like, surely they would have, if it's the best of the best, they would be meant to be playing the day after in the final. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting, like, when they launched it the other day, like, Daniel Arzani's there from Melbourne Victory, and they're like, would you like to play in the All-Stars game? And he's like, I'd like to be in the grand final. So it was the same a couple of years ago when they played Barcelona, right? It's about having this sort of spectacular around it, and if teams are at the pointy end, unfortunately their players, well, fortunately for them, but unfortunately for those that want to watch them on that All-Star stage, won't be involved. So just the way it is, I guess. But you just hope... with both of these teams, you get that good mix of some young players getting exposed. Like, I'd love to see in the women's game, like, a Daniela Gullich, for example, going up and playing against Arsenal. Like, some of these ones, a Peter Trimis maybe, like, some of these young players have really impressed, as well as, a combination of established stars so that the game can be competitive, obviously, and, you know, they can go with the physicality. It's quite an exciting platform in that sense, I think, for players. And it'll be interesting because I think we'll be out of season dub-wise when that happens. So it'll be interesting to see which players are available and who's ready to go. And we know there's a camp coming up just afterwards, Matilda's games as well. So, yeah, it'll be, interesting.
Apparently you get to vote.
You get to vote.
Which is like crowd. Yeah. I think that was said by on DubZone. Like, voting opens on Tuesday, so that they'll take that into account. Fans putting in their nominations for who they'd like to see in that side. I don't know how much that will weigh on the selection process, but like you say, Hara, a lot of things like availability will also presumably dictate what that side will look like. But I think that's just the how good the announcement for that. So the A-League Women All-Stars playing Arsenal Women, which is so exciting, and I think regardless of like who's playing, it's going to be very intriguing and fun. So yeah, sorry, Marissa, I interrupted you there.
I would just use it to pick out potential Matildas, current and potential Matilda players. Kayla Morrison, centre back, go on, have a run against some Arsenal stars. As I said, Trimis, Gallich, those sorts of players, and also just give players a chance to show that they can hit that level, right? I think it's a great chance to use it as I know it's a friendly, but a bit of an audition. And I know it's obviously going to be about welcoming home the Matildas players as well. I know there's concerns about workload and those sorts of things that are coming into it as well, which can get a bit of a boot as well. Some few players are going to get to experience what the Tillys experience just about every international window, I think.
That's what I was going to mention. There were people absolutely freaking out at the WSL season ending on May 18th, this game taking place on May 24, and then the next international window starting May 27. So there were a lot of people being like, but my national team player has to go on a 24-hour flight to the other side of the world and then has to come back. And because, especially for the Europeans, most of their international windows are filled with qualifiers of some description or another. So there was a lot of panic from the Europeans. And you know what? I reckon it's probably justified. Because it is a lot to cram in, even though they make the Aussies do that almost every international window. But anywho, yeah, it is very exciting, and there was a lot of excitement. I found it really endearing of just
Obviously long-term Arsenal women's fans and newer ones who have, you know, kind of tagged along post World Cup because it has the most Aussies, or they love the drama, or all those kinds of things that they're just like, oh, I get to see my team in Australia. That's so cool. So, the All-Stars always has that kind of, positive glow to it, where people actually get to see the team that they wake up for in the middle of the night, almost on a weekly basis, in their own backyard. So that definitely is a how good. Do we have any other how goods?
Oh, I have one. Just again with the English waking up, things like Gareth Taylor's the first among these to wake up to the fact that Mary Fowler is very good. I quite enjoyed them all losing their minds this morning over Fowler taking one corner with her left foot and another one with her right foot. She's just in awesome form at the moment. She's been back, she's starting, she's scoring goals, she's getting involved, she's thriving. And yeah, it's great to see, because we've been seeing her do that at Matilda's level for quite a while now, and now she's starting to get that confidence. And it's incredible seeing, like, the commentary being like, oh, but Chloe Kelly's not playing. And then Gareth Taylor saying, well, you know, she's got to get past Mary Fowler. Mary's been sensational. So, yeah, it's really nice to see, especially given that was one of the big worries coming into this sort of pre-Olympics run. So, yeah, Mary Fowler really finding her feet at Man City. How good?
Absolutely.
Both feet.
Both feet, indeed. Absolutely. How good. Angela?
A very quick how good and a mention to Canberra United women and Brisbane Roar men, I think, hosting the first green games in the A-Leagues over the weekend. So that's an initiative spearheaded by the PFA and the players to draw attention to the environmental impact of, you know, organised and professional sport, and to, you know, raise awareness around the different ways that those impacts can be offset in the future. So, yeah, really positive initiative, and I won't go into the details. You can look it up yourself if you want. Sorry, that's a bit of a salty into a how good. But I just wanted to give it a shout out in case anyone missed that.
100%. That's very much a how good. But that is us done for today. Obviously, we have the final round of the dub to look forward to this upcoming weekend, and then Tilly's games after that, and then finals. So it's going to be an excellent couple of months to round out this season. But as always, we're over on espn.com.au and the ESPN app. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, and all of the usual pod spots. If you like what we do, leave a review and subscribe. If you want to have a chat to us, we're at The Far Post Pod on all social media. But until next time, Slayers!